are now plugged in to the Delphi podcast.
Hey everyone, it's Tommy, one of the co-founders at Delphi, one of the co-leads for Delphi Ventures. Today, I'm thrilled to have on Nick Emmons, who runs a portfolio company called Upshot. Nick, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Nick, you've been in the space a while, right? Walk me through the original focus for Upshot.
Yeah, so we started Upshot back in 2020. I was coming out of leading blockchain for a large insurance company, an asset manager called John Hancock, and Manulife is their global brand. And we were focused on building infrastructure around creating more efficient long-tail markets in that setting of risk. But I was pretty interested in this problem of driving efficiency to these long-tail financial assets that previously were less compatible with financial markets. So we started building this kind of protocol for people to reach consensus on subjective questions when we started Upshot. And the initial purpose of this was to create this sort of crowdsourced appraisal platform for these assets that don't change hands very often, NFTs initially. And we could supplement that sort of infrequent market data with appraisals or kind of valuations from humans. And we were doing this leveraging this really new field of mechanism design at the time called peer prediction that observes the structure of information when constructing incentives for people's responses to questions such that their rewards are maximized when they answer subjective questions honestly. It's a really interesting field of mechanism design, and we thought it was a really kind of applicable tool for building these kinds of subjective valuation network. As we were kind of moving down that path, we found that humans just aren't very scalable. They aren't very accurate in sort of taking on these types of tasks. And that's when we shifted a lot of our attention to the kind of building ML infrastructure for creating more efficient long-tail markets and more efficient financial infrastructure in general. And so that's what we've been doing for the past 2.5 years in building the kind of leading AI x crypto infrastructure for pricing long-tail assets, for building different financial infrastructure around long-tail assets, like market-making infrastructure, lending infrastructure, some perpetual infrastructure. And so that's what we've been doing up until, I'd say, the past 6 months. We can get into some of the kind of more recent stuff we're doing, but I'd say that's a kind of quick history lesson on where Upshot came from.
Yeah, damn, it's a journey. So just to provide the listeners with a bit of a visual kind of a visual feel to like what you were going after first. I think I remember kind of the first iteration of the UI, like, you know, I would see a CryptoPunk, right? And people would come along and they would vote like more or less valuable. Is that sort of the crowdsource kind of, you know, vision you guys had?
Exactly. Yeah. The app was kind of like Hot or Not for NFTs. So just as you said, people would be given two NFTs and asked which one is more valuable, or given a single NFT and asked which value range it falls in. And then over time, through people answering these questions and being rewarded based on these peer prediction mechanisms that reward honesty, we would theoretically approach these kinds of valuations for assets that were generated outside of the kind of normal operations that the market took on, because the market isn't very efficient for these types of like long tail, less fungible assets.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, in the height of the NFT summer or whatever season it was a couple of years ago, I always remember like I would either buy floor assets because, you know, easily liquid, easy to sell, you know what you're getting, or sort of the cream of the crop top asset because everybody knew it was super valuable. But once you delve into that middle ground on these 10,000 mint NFTs, it got really hard to determine what they were worth.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a testament for kind of how inefficient a lot of these types of assets are. We have a saying internally that if it's not a grail, it's a floor. If it's not in that sort of top 0.1% of these traditional 10,000 PFP collections, then you're essentially going to be able to sell it at floor price. And that shows how inefficient kind of the open market is when pricing the majority of these collections, which exists in these kind of mid-tier ranges. And so that's what we've been able to solve is add more sort of granularity, add more efficiency to these kind of growing sets of more kind of nuanced, less fungible long-tail asset categories.
So what was the main issue or roadblock you guys hit with, you know, let's call it the crowdsourced pricing? Like, why did you guys leave that area of study and move on to like this crypto AI angle?
Yeah, so when people were kind of using this Hot or Not for NFTs app to value different NFTs, we ran into two problems. One is that sort of mode of it revealing your beliefs around the value of different things, this like mechanically clicking elements on a UI, just isn't very scalable. People aren't going to do that all day long. There's so many of these assets. And so we just weren't able to hit the scale through that mechanism. And then second is accuracy. I think like we as humans have very limited cognitive bandwidth. And so it takes many highly approximative questions to get to any level of sort of like absolute estimate for evaluation. So we'd have to be answering tens of these NFT A or NFT B questions to get to any sort of reasonable kind of ranking of NFTs. And so that's what really pushed us into the direction of AI. I think AI is the most deflationary technology we've ever had access to. It's this incredibly capable form of compute, and it allows us to solve both of these problems in a like fairly elegant way. We can now price many, many assets. I think we're producing kind of real-time price estimates for over 400 million assets now. And we're able to do so at like high levels of accuracy. AI is far more capable in sort of producing these highly accurate estimates than any human or any cohort of humans could be. And with this, the idea has always been, let's build these kind of centralized models for creating more efficient financial markets such that we can later come back to this original peer prediction network, this sort of idea of a kind of crowdsourced source of subjective honesty. But instead of that being made up of human actors, it'd be made up of many different sort of AI agents or AI actors. And so our goal has always been to kind of help bootstrap that network by building our own models for the use cases we saw as being kind of most interesting or most fit for crypto.
Nick, in a very nice way, it sounds like you're putting the crowdsource people's jobs out of business and you're replacing them with AI.
Yeah, that's what we're doing, you know? I think that's going to happen to a lot of us, so.
So let's go through like the stack here. Like let's go through the components that enable what you're doing. And let's just first recap what exactly you are doing, right? Like what is Upshot doing for prices today?
So let's get into the decentralized side. I think that's kind of the more interesting side. We can touch on some of the centralized components as we get into it. So essentially what we've built is sort of our initial models in this decentralized AI network we're building is models that take in a bunch of different pieces of information, open market data, metadata, both sort of explicitly defined, so like the traits in different NFTs and NFT examples, as well as sort of meta traits, like additional metadata or attributes that we observe and that are influential on market movements. Look at things like social sentiment data, order book data, all sorts of data. The more data, the better. The more kind of granular, the more accurate your predictions can be. And with these, we're able to produce kind of real-time price estimates or price predictions of around what the next sale for a given asset is going to be at a very high cadence. So we're producing price estimates every 5 minutes for all of these assets that we're appraising. And we're essentially trying to predict what the next sale price for that asset or that type of asset is going to be, as a means of sort of producing a in-the-moment valuation for it. And now what we're doing with this decentralized AI network we're building is trying to construct a set of incentives such that anyone with these types of models for kind of using AI to solve some problem, in this case, long-tail price predictions, but any problem, can coordinate along some shared kind of economic substrate and be rewarded based on how well they contribute to a shared objective. So in the network, an objective might be to predict the price of ETH USD 24 hours from now. And your sort of objective function might be minimizing the mean absolute directional loss. So get as close as you can while considering direction or directionality to predicting that exchange rate of ETH USD 24 hours from now. And now you have many different actors who are all contributing some form of machine intelligence towards that objective. And those predictions are being combined to create a kind of meta prediction that is more intelligent or more representative than any of the individual models that make it up. And the people who are contributing these models are being rewarded based on how kind of performant or useful their prediction is relative to others. So now you've created this sort of efficient market for machine intelligence across different types of objectives. and you've created a form of like collective intelligence, for lack of a better term, such that the output of the network is better than the individual kind of pieces that make it up. And with that, we can start to sort of realize the kind of network benefits of machine intelligence, turn AI into a primitive in itself that can be used when building decentralized networks, and start to kind of realize the full potential of what this sort of crypto X AI intersection can look like.
This is really cool, Nick. So let me give it back to you just so I understand the flow, right? So you guys have created a proprietary AI model, right? This isn't an LLM like ChatGPT, but sort of a prop model. And you ingest info on NFTs, like attributes, the things we see on OpenSea, right? And basically those attributes go into this model and you guys produce a price estimate for what you think will be the next sale price.
Correct, yeah. And that's our kind of core model. We've extended it in a number of ways to power different lending strategies and market making strategies. That's the sort of core of the model.
I'm curious, are the price predictions in ETH terms or US dollar terms?
With NFTs, we've stuck to ETH terms because I think that's primarily what the kind of NFT market is denominated in. And so that's what we produced our predictions around.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's pretty obviously cool about this model is in the past, you kind of relied on a crowdsourced network of people to kind of click through, you know, hot or not, price increase, price decrease. Now it sounds like you're crowdsourcing not only the best data, but potentially the best models to produce the best output. So I think you've sort of like flipped the script.
Exactly. Yeah, that was always the goal. When we realized that humans were not like the most optimal participant in that early network, we wanted to move towards this path of creating a kind of similarly structured network, but where the participants are sort of AI agents or ML models, which are far more capable across like a far like larger breadth of activities. And so that's what we're doing.
It's pretty cool. And where can people see these price predictions? Like, it's not on OpenSea, right? Or
They're in a bunch of different places. They're in some of our tools that we've built. They're in different perpetual platforms. They're in different lending platforms as we power different sort of like loan terms. We'll be coming online with the kind of an expansion of our NFT pricing to what I think is going to be a high growth category in the NFT world over the next year in kind of tokenized RWAs. So we're bringing online kind of watch appraisals or tokenized watch appraisals and turning indices of those into perpetual products, enabling kind of AI powered loans against those on different lending platforms like MetaStreet, things like that. So especially in the NFT-Fi ecosystem of products, these appraisals and this sort of like AI-powered financial tooling is quite useful.
So I'd like to double-click on the model side, right? So, you know, we're close with the Mythos VC team, and one of their ideas around moats is that in AI, you have moats around proprietary models, proprietary data, or like proprietary business integrations, right? Like the Copilot for Microsoft Excel is worth more than the Copilot that doesn't have that integration, right? Can you walk us through how you created your model? Like, how hard was this? What data did you need? Like, why is the Upshot appraisal model a moat?
Sure, yeah. We've been developing it kind of continuously over the past 2.5 years. I'd say we had our first model up and running after about 6 to 8 weeks of development and sort of experimentation. I think really what makes the Upshot model useful is some kind of unique insights we've had around the kind of composition of the attribute space or the trait space of different assets. Our models are expanding beyond NFTs, but for the sake of simplicity, I'll keep talking about the NFT models. But we made some like pretty interesting insights early on around how you can infer valuation or information around valuation by looking at the kind of trait space in its totality and the sort of relative value across traits. And so that's been what's sort of since having this realization sort of guided a lot of our kind of philosophy and methodology and how we produce these models. Just to like go a little bit further, it allows you to kind of usefully borrow higher volume segments of different markets to inform the valuation of lower volume segments of markets, which are often the hardest things to price. And that's where we've really been able to shine is producing quality, reliable, accurate price predictions for the kind of tails of these collections. So not just producing accurate appraisals or price predictions for the floors where these things trade semi-often relative to other parts of the collection, but also in producing accurate price predictions as you move into the really low velocity parts of the collection. So the parts of the collection that maybe change hands once every year or even less frequently in some cases. And that's where we've really been able to have this kind of edge on others is in accuracy at the tails.
That's fascinating, Nick. One of the things that I get confused about, though, is if the model is sort of the most important piece of IP for you guys, right? Like, this is where the value is. I struggle sometimes in understanding, like, as this model gets used, as you produce price estimates, as people see them and dApps and things like that, like, how does the model get smarter, right? Are these people saying, like, you know, good price, bad price, and sort of that, like, teaches the model? Do you have to retrain the model? Like, how does, like, real-world usage make your model better?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we retrain the model often. Open market data especially, because that's sort of the kind of, like, I guess, highest conviction truth we have access to is how these things actually end up trading in the open market is the kind of most useful information for how we can iterate or improve the model. So if we're off in some pocket of the model will adjust based on what happens in the market in those kinds of contexts. It's quite adaptive to different market scenarios. It's fairly responsive to kind of periods of sporadic volatility. So yeah, I'd say it responds quite well to kind of market dynamics, and it's ever improving. We're injecting new things into the model. And this is also part of the reason why we were interested in kind of building this AI network is, like, we don't claim to be the kind of forever leader in producing long tail price predictions. I think it's sort of an arms race when you're these individual model builders. And as the categories of assets expand so dramatically, which we anticipate them doing, moving outside of just like PFPs and generative art and moving into a myriad of different like RWAs, gaming items, new types of long tail assets we can't even really imagine yet. It's important to focus on the kind of underlying coordination mechanism for many different models to come together, as opposed to be always sort of operating in this arms race trying to build the best model in given verticals. So that's what's driven us a lot to focus on the network as well.
That's really cool, Nick. I agree. I mean, just to share some info, I'm getting the feeling that, I mean, BitTensor is a super well-known, I think because it just has the largest market cap of like the crypto AI space. And when you dig into it, I mean, BitTensor is not creating their own models, right? They're basically a coordination mechanism between those uploading models, you know, call the miners, the validators who make sure they do the work, and sort of the users accessing those models, right? And they do it on a per subnet basis. So you have image generation, you have a text translation subnet, yada, yada. It seems similar to kind of your thesis, right? Which is on anybody could sort of upload a model. I guess I'm curious, like, did you take any, you know, vision from like the BitTensor focus, or is your end goal very different? And I'm just using this because I think it may be a metaphor that people can relate to.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, I think BitTensor has been a really inspiring project in the space. I think what we're particularly focused on that differentiates from BitTensor, because there are things that like have inspired us in terms of mechanism design and things like that in BitTensor. I think where we differ is one, placing a larger emphasis on this notion of, I guess, collective intelligence or collaborative intelligence, aligning incentives such that different models in the network can actively learn off of one another and improve off of one another. I think we're at this stage in sort of the AI industry where it's still quite nascent, but the kind of closed source model creators, these few institutions that have created these kind of models that are leagues ahead of most other models. And it's quite likely that these models will continue to kind of expand their lead. For this kind of grassroots part of the industry, for the open source part of the community, it's important for us to figure out ways to create machine intelligence in ways similar to how we, I guess, create like open source software or even kind of composable decentralized networks, such that people with different insights or competencies in different contexts or I guess like corners of parameter space, for lack of a better term, can all learn off of one another and create a form of meta intelligence that is better than any of these individual either open source models or models created by individuals that make up the network. And so this notion of collective intelligence is at the forefront of really what we're trying to solve with this network. And then second is sort of the focus of applications. We're focused on, at least initially, a somewhat narrower scope of applications, those being primarily financial applications. I think crypto is largely a financial innovation. I think in financial applications is where crypto's found most, if not all, of its product market fit. And I think there is a really clear synergy between the most deflationary and capable form of compute we've ever had access to in AI and these open and permissionlessly composable financial systems. And so we're really focused on how we can use the network to kind of kick off this next era of AI-powered DeFi primitives. And by focusing on that kind of tighter application space in the beginning, we're able to make certain kind of optimizations in mechanism design and thinking about the kind of trade-off space of the network early on. So I'd say that those are like the two big things where we kind of depart from the BitTensor focus.
That's really helpful, especially on the comparison to sort of, you know, coloring the lines. I think I'm at the edge of my AI knowledge, but the idea of models learning off of each other is something that seems like it's very hard to do, but also a key differentiator. Is that like sci-fi or is that something that's happening right now?
It's nascent. I wouldn't say it's sci-fi though. We're seeing some examples of this. And there's some interesting research happening in the sort of model merging world or collaborative models. In some kind of flavors, it's been something that's been established for a little longer, but it is a fairly nascent field of research, but it is possible. So continuing down that field of research, I think, is a worthy endeavor if we are to kind of realize a more equitable and distributed form of machine intelligence going into the future, one that's not owned entirely by the top 1 to 3 models that are closed sourced and created by these centralized organizations.
It's pretty cool. It sort of sounds though, I mean, sort of like how liquidity works in DeFi, that like once you have a really solid model like that's deployed to Upshot's network, whether you create it or whether somebody else creates it, it sounds like there's sort of like a liquidity data black hole, right? Where this thing just gets the most data first because it's chosen and it learns the fastest. So it sort of seems like there's, I don't want to call it model centralization, but you know, maybe that is it, right? Do you see any concerns with that happening on Upshot's network?
Yeah, I think there's always these concerns around kind of dominant actors establishing these leads. I think there are some design choices we've made to try to mitigate this. I think the kind of category we're operating in helps mitigate this as well, where there's such a kind of diversity of nuanced input such that even an individual with a fairly tightly scoped model or a limited data set can contribute positively in some kind of problem spaces that the network is accommodating. And so hopefully this sort of diversification of applicability helps to mitigate some of those concerns. Additionally, like the way we've set up the network tries to align incentives well between sort of data providers and compute resources such that there is a kind of more frictionless distribution of those things, both data and compute, such that there isn't as much of a leg up for these individuals with kind of deep pockets and established and ever-increasing leads. But yeah, I think that is just kind of a fundamental property of many networks and markets and something that we can try to mitigate at best.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't always been of this opinion, but I definitely lean that we're moving into a future of many models versus a single model. And the only reason I feel that way is because whenever I start using a very specific narrow model for a specific use case that's trained on a specific set of data, let's call it a crypto AI bot versus a general, you know, Google's Bard, the answers you get are just so much more specific.
Yeah, 100%. There's a lot more depth and performance that you can get from a network of more specialized models than us all plugging into the same kind of foundational or general purpose model. And there's an appetite for developing these things too. I don't have the kind of most up-to-date numbers, but there's north of 550,000 models on Hugging Face, like the leading kind of open source AI community. And so there's an appetite for people to experiment at varying kind of levels of capacity, from just individual developers to research orgs, to some of the largest kind of tech institutions in the world, to kind of further the breadth of kind of diversity in this open source AI movement. And so I think there's an appetite for it on both sides, and there are clear kind of performance benefits of using more narrow or specialized models depending on the use case or application you're kind of plugging into.
Yeah, I'd love to disagree with you for the pod, but I agree.
Yeah.
So before we get into like the crypto AI and double click there, let's just close the loop on Upshot a bit. Like, so how do the different actors sort of interact with Upshot, right? Like, just walk us through, like, I'm a model creator, I have a new model, I'm a user and I want an NFT price, I, you know, have hardware to run the model or inference. Just walk us through the stakeholders here.
Sure, yeah. So you're a model creator, let's start there. You have some model for, let's use a price prediction for like a more fungible or known asset, like ETHUSD. I would join the network is broken up into different topics, which are each made distinct by sort of the objective functions that they're kind of built around. So an objective function, as we talked about a little earlier, for this ETHUSD price prediction might be predicting the price of ETHUSD, say 24 hours from now, while minimizing mean absolute directional loss. So I would join the network, I would be emitting predictions regularly. Others would join the network, they would be emitting predictions regularly. As the sort of market is revealing the ground truth around what's actually happened relative to our predictions, we're each getting rewarded based on how well we contributed to the kind of collective minimization of that loss function relative to the others in that topic. And the way that's being revealed is by this kind of role of validators, I guess is the best way to think of them, who provide kind of economic security to the network and who are tasked with assessing or scoring the different model creators. So they're the ones who are receiving these different predictions from different model creators in the network. They're waiting for the ground truth to be revealed, like when the open market reveals the actual prices that occur over the following 24 hours. And then they're giving scores to each of those model creators that submitted predictions, and the rewards that have either been distributed by the network or delivered as fees from consumers are then shared between those kind of validators and model creators. And then how a consumer might use this is, an example might be kind of like Yearn with AI-powered strategies. This has been something that we've been working on as sort of an initial use case for or initial application on the network. But you could have these kinds of vaults as exists across a lot of DeFi, pioneered by Yearn, where people can deposit capital into these vaults passively, and then different strategies sort of manage that capital in hopes to generate yield for the people depositing capital. And obviously the problem with that today is that those strategies for generating yield are codified in smart contracts in this really limited or constrained compute environment that is kind of the blockchain. And so the yield you can earn from those things is somewhat limited. Whereas if you use AI, it's a far more kind of capable form of compute that can theoretically generate more yields, make sense of more information in more sophisticated ways, and theoretically make more profitable kind of capital management decisions. So in this example, we would have a kind of urine style vault that points to the topic of predicting the price of ETHUSD that's on the Upshot network. As people deposit capital, that capital is being used to make simple buy or sell decisions of ETHUSD based on the predictions of the network. The network says ETHUSD is going to be higher than what it is 24 hours from now, it makes sense for it to buy. If it says it's going to be less than that, it makes sense for it to sell. And theoretically, because you have these more capable kind of engines for predicting those prices and more accurate engines for doing so, you should be able to generate more consistent and higher returns as a capital provider to that vault. This is obviously a very minimal example. Like the strategies would be more complex across more assets, but that's sort of a kind of end-to-end example of model creators joining the network, validators providing economic security to network, and then these new kind of types of AI-powered DeFi protocols building on the network and leveraging the resulting machine intelligence to inform kind of more expressive financial operations.
Nick, you're making me glad I'm a VC because I invest earlier in the cycle. I feel like there's no way people are going to be able to trade and win against these AI models in the future.
AI is smarter than us. It's tough to compete, you know? It's the future.
No, it is. I love your flow, right? Like you have an area for model creators to upload their work and make money. You have a way for users to get involved and to leverage this, like, you know, whether it's simple asks or whether it's through like complex or more complex apps like a Yearn powered by AI. One of my more fundamental questions for you is on economic incentives, right? If you're a model creator, one of the key concerns is that, you know, you spent a lot of money getting data or paying people or using compute to train these models, which is quite expensive and hard to access the A100s or the really good hardware to train models. So there are significant sunk costs here in models. And, you know, just putting it out there on transparently in crypto is, I mean, it's impossible. You can't store them on Ethereum, but you give up all your IP, right? You give up all your money. So I guess walk me through how, if you upload a model to Upshot as a model creator, how do I like retain the money that I put in to train this thing?
Yeah, so that's actually an important thing we've designed around from the beginning is removing this prerequisite from having your like IP revealed to the broader network. So when model creators are sort of participating in the network, they're not sharing any underlying IP. They're sharing the kind of output of the model. And this is important too, because not only does this mean individuals who have like sunk a lot of money and resources, time into creating this kind of unique piece of technology, but it also means the network can leverage the kind of leading closed source models today. So theoretically, nodes in the network could just be calling out to the OpenAI API or the Anthropic API and leveraging those models for what they're capable of doing today. And that's only possible by sort of removing this prerequisite of the models revealing proprietary information around their underlying kind of methodology or processes when sharing information with the network. And so from that perspective, from a sort of IP protection, the network has been designed sort of from the ground up to support that. And then there is still the question of like, how are these model creators getting paid? And I think these applications will be willing to pay a premium for a kind of consuming machine intelligence in new sectors that are sort of fundamentally incapable of being supported without it. I think take the Yearn example to stay consistent. The way we've structured some of these kind of test vaults leading up to launch has been just give the model creators a portion of the yield that's earned. And so now these model creators are kind of earning at the scale of the capital they're managing. And the incentives obviously scale with that. You couple that with sort of network subsidies and things like that. And I think there is a fairly kind of compelling economic story for model creators joining the network.
That's awesome, Nick. And I mean, I believe that you guys are using Modulus Labs to handle keeping sort of these models private. And there are other players here. We've invested in Inference Labs. There's also Giza. You know, walk me through a little bit of how that works, right? Because if I'm in crypto, you know, my first question is like, I'm using an AI model off chain. Like, how do I know that's not being messed with, right? Like, I can't see the weights. I can't see anything. How do I know that that's hasn't been tampered with?
Yeah, that's super important. I think especially for financial applications, like as we bring AI to DeFi, we don't have the same assurances of knowing exactly the things that are being run. And these are potentially highly complex things that are potentially managing massive amounts of money. And so it is quite important to figure out this problem of verifiability or more kind of trustless consumption of inference. And so that's what we've done with Modulus Labs is leveraging their technology, have this thing that we're calling a kind of ZK predictor, which is a highly optimized snark circuit for verifying the output of tree-based models. And tree-based models are quite useful for financial tasks, sort of the type of model we use in our core price prediction models. And essentially what happens is we or others on the network who are producing proofs of their models send requests of proof to the kind of Modulus system, and then Modulus batches these requests for proofs into verifiable inference that can be brought on chain such that anyone can verify that the output of some model is the result of the kind of advertised underlying model. And what's really exciting about this is just like the level of throughput that we've been able to achieve, or that Modulus largely has been able to achieve through this kind of new system. I think the ceiling, don't quote me exactly on numbers here, but the ceiling on throughput for these kind of ZKML systems was around 12 verifiable pieces of inference a day. It's very hard to build ZK circuits for like a form of kind of probabilistic compute in kind of ML models. So you could verify around 12 pieces of inference per day prior to this. And maybe that's off to some degree, but what's kind of exciting about the ZK predictor is that because of how optimized it is for tree-based models and Modulus' approach, we're able to verify 10,000 points of inference, or approaching 10,000 points of inference per hour. So for the first time, this is kind of a viable scale for many production applications. It's a huge step up from the previous throughput, and it can actually be used viably across a bunch of different kind of AI-powered DeFi applications.
Yeah, that's an absurd increase.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I struggle with a bit is that when I talk to people about crypto and AI, and I tell them that, you know, hey, now or in the coming months or quarters, whatever, you'll be able to add like real AI models to your applications, right? Like really expand the logic space of what you can do and what's capable. But it's always hard to contextualize those things, right? It's always hard to give people examples and to say how much better it is. Do you feel like that is something that, you know, you're pretty much executing on, or do you think that maybe my view is like too exponential there?
Refresh me of your view that AI will be used across essentially all critical protocols in the space.
I guess more so that like the capabilities of smart contracts and applications in crypto, they greatly expand in what they can do because now they can leverage these off-chain models.
100%. I mean, like AI is indisputably the most powerful form of compute that we've ever had access to. It's the most sort of expressive form of compute. It's the most deflationary technology we've had access to. And so turning that into a primitive via these kind of decentralized form factors of it, like kind of what we're building, what Modulus is building, what others are building, it turns AI itself into a primitive like any other primitive in the space, such that it could be used composably to build ever more complex and expressive applications. And just because of this sort of step function of capability that AI presents to building decentralized systems, I think it's quite natural that we'll start to see some really exotic and like applications that are orders of magnitude more powerful than the applications that exist today.
Yeah, I'm both scared and very happy, but we'll see what.
Same, yeah. There's good reason to be scared, but I think it's net good.
Nick, you have so much info. Like, I know I'm jumping around a lot, but like, I need to ask you these questions. So when I think crypto and AI, I think it's very easy to think of using crypto to incentivize like the hardware stack, right? Like giving out tokens to share your compute, to share your bandwidth, you know, use your Mac GPU to train models to do inference. I think that is like one bucket. And then the other bucket is sort of what you guys are doing, which is like enabling real crypto intelligence within apps and for use cases. I guess, like, how do you think about the crypto AI stack? Like, do you view it more in that DPIN Airbnb GPU, or do you view it more on like the model side, using AI in crypto app side, or, you know, are there other buckets here?
Yeah, I break the stack down into three layers, and this is something that I'm still like kind of fine tuning. So it may change over time, but I see the base layer as sort of what you just described as this kind of resource provisioning layer. This is where the kind of compute provisioning lives. This is where data provisioning lives. Potentially like ETL or data labeling lives in this layer of the stack. I see the middle of the stack being the kind of like training and fine tuning layer. And this is more, if you categorize the bottom stack as sort of commoditizing compute or the inputs that go into machine intelligence, I see this middle stack as sort of commoditizing the intelligence itself. Like, how do we create intelligence that is more capable or more performant or smarter because it's part of a network versus being siloed? And then the third layer of the stack, I think, is this kind of inference or consumption layer, is how do we then take this machine intelligence that has been trained on decentrally kind of provisioned resources and has achieved a kind of performance or been fine-tuned in a decentralized way, how do we deliver that to different applications? And so I see it as this kind of three layers: resource provisioning, training slash fine-tuning, and then inference as the kind of three main layers of the decentralized AI stack.
Having the stack to visualize is helpful. Nick, to get into your, I guess, stronger, like more global views on decentralized AI versus centralized AI, I'm curious, like, your thoughts. Like, most people think OpenAI versus an Upshot or a BitTensor. Like, I don't know, like share with me some of your stronger views, right? Like, how do you feel about the dynamic between the two?
Yeah, I don't think they necessarily have to be mutually exclusive. I don't think it has to be this us versus them thing. I think naturally there are incentives for an OpenAI to maybe not join a decentralized AI network because of the kind of size of their lead and how much better they are than others. So I don't see it as like closed source or open source or centralized versus decentralized is what the topic is. I think it's a question of market design more than anything. And can we design sort of incentivized enough mechanisms for selling kind of centralized AI and the kind of open AI business model as it exists today? Or can we create a sort of alternative via decentralized systems? I think there's analogs. I think we can kind of see the rate of innovation by which we've experienced in DeFi over the past 3 to 4 years and how that's been a comparable level of innovation that we see over decades in TradFi. And I think we'll see similar kind of tailwinds supporting that of decentralized AI as well. Centralized AI will persist. Closed source centralized AI will continue to be a kind of meaningful percentage of the AI space. But by constructing AI or by kind of building machine intelligence in a decentralized setting, it has an inherent advantage in leveraging kind of markets as this global coordination mechanism for different participants. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that answers your question. That's sort of my initial take.
It definitely does. I tend to think of things too binary, but I guess you have to when you're investing. You just mentioned that there's 550,000 open source models on Hugging Face. So clearly there is a many model world, right? And ChatGPT just released their app store of sorts where you can, you know, pick and choose different GPTs to use for different use cases. And I think they mentioned they have 3 million. I'm sure most of them are useless, but I'm trying to figure out, like, can you do what you're building with Upshot just building on the ChatGPT app store, right? Like, what does building this in crypto change for you, right? Like, what is the stakeholder that you can't target by doing this in a centralized way or building on that app store?
Yeah, I think this comes back to what we talked about a little earlier around the sort of usefulness of more specialized models in different contexts versus these GPT agents, which are all built on the same foundational model. I think this will continue to be the case where different models will be good at different sort of corners of the parameter space for different sort of use cases or categories of applications. And so you need to have this kind of economic substrate, I for lack of a better term, to align people with different models, with different insights that apply to different categories of things to support the kind of ever-growing set of use cases that will exist for AI in the world. I think AI is going to fundamentally redefine all of society's critical functions. And it's kind of paramount, not only from a kind of feasibility perspective, but from an ideological one to a degree, that is built on a kind of shared incentive layer, a shared kind of economic coordination mechanism, instead of being owned by a single entity and being built on a single model that is good at some things but not good at others. So that's kind of my response to that.
I haven't thought of that. So the concern with the ChatGPT app store is that every sort of iteration is just a fine-tuned version of that underlying base ChatGPT model.
Exactly. Yeah, you're still plugging into GPT-4 or whatever the latest version of GPT is over time. You're not plugging into a network of highly specialized or kind of diverse models that are good at different things.
That's wild. So, I mean, I guess it's hard, though, for the world to understand the impact of that, right? Like, if I'm a test machine.ai, like shout out to one of our port codes, like, they're building a proprietary model to do smart contract auditing, so you don't have to wait 6 months. You just turn in your, you know, link your GitHub. Like, that is not an LLM, right? Like ChatGPT, like, that would never be able to be an iteration of that. So I think with Upshot, like, you can upload, you know, either of those two models to sort of work.
Yeah, exactly. And I think over time, people will come to their own conclusions, and sort of the best alternative to this will win, whether it's a kind of single foundational model that a bunch of people are creating, I guess more like kind of higher context prompts for, or fine-tuned instantiations of, or a network of diverse models. You know, the open market is what guides the world. It's what coordinates society. And so whichever paradigm is better at operating across the high value categories of tasks will win. And my bet, and I don't think it's a very controversial one, is that more models coordinated via market-based mechanisms that are specialized in different categories will generally lead to more accurate results on average than a bunch of slightly kind of fine-tuned GPTs or agents built on a single foundational model.
I think I definitely agree with you. Are there any other areas of crypto and AI in that overlap that has you excited? Like, any other specific projects or any other new initiatives that we're able to do now?
Yeah, I think that it's still a fairly nascent space. It's nice to see more projects moving out of this kind of resource provisioning layer of the stack. I think historically, that's where a lot of these AI-related projects have lived. I'm very bullish on things like Ritual, which are trying to kind of solve other parts of the stack. So I think there's an expanding of focus in people building decentralized AI applications. I think the excitement around decentralized AI is obviously picking up. I'm particularly interested, as I said, in these sort of financial applications. I think the rise of ChatGPT and how generative AI has taken the world by storm over the past year plus has placed a lot of people's focus in the world of generative AI, where it's still fairly nascent. It's not as easy to kind of compose into, I guess, like a more trustless or verifiable form factor. So I'd like to see, I think this will happen, but I hope to see more of the space focus on kind of financial models or I guess like more classical ML in kind of bringing AI to DeFi first. I think we can bring it to DeFi and these different financial applications today. And that's where AI will have the most kind of immediate and largest impact in the crypto space. So that's something I'd like to see more of. I think like generative AI is great. We'll get to a point where we can reason about it and use it as a primitive in decentralized systems. But models that are conducive for financial applications are kind of here today and can be composed in highly trustless and verifiable form factors.
Yeah, that's a hell of a view. I mean, it gets a little, I'm not totally sure how, as investors, we're able to figure out like who wins here, right? Or like as a user, what do you use, Uniswap? Do you use 1inch? Like who's got the best AI model? Like, I don't know. It seems like it's so complex that it's very hard to really make a decision as a user or an investor on which is the best model and thus experience, unless you're just actively using it and comparing it, I guess.
Yeah, and that's why we focused on like the underlying coordination mechanism, because I think there will always be this arms race of models. There will always be a model that's better than this other model. There will be models that are good at certain things versus other things. And so focusing on that underlying layer that coordinates amongst different models, in my opinion, I'm definitely biased here, is that layer is where a lot of the value gets driven. It's the sort of what we've seen in crypto and DeFi to date is that the layers that facilitate sort of competitive and like coordinated interactions are the ones that capture much of the value. And I don't think that changes with AI. So that's the bet we're making. That's sort of my perspective.
So just to rehash that, your bet is that we will live in a many model world, and we'll have, you know, millions of models, because all of these models are going to be fine tuned on specific data to serve specific, not generalized use cases. And the network that's able to coordinate which model a request uses is like the network or marketplace that will be the most valuable.
Yeah, I would say that the nuance I'd add to that is I think it's the network that coordinates the sort of, I guess, like economic interactions of different models. I think there will be these sort of more consumer facing like pieces of router infrastructure as well that are sort of routing applications to different models, sort of abstracting away model coordination. But I think the kind of where models coordinate on an economic basis is where most of the value ends up accruing. And people building that type of infrastructure, I think, end up as sort of the premier pieces of infrastructure as AI becomes a more meaningful part of the kind of decentralized stack.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, Nick. We're almost at the hour. Is there anything we didn't talk about or didn't cover that you wanted to get to?
I don't think so. I'm curious what your controversial view on crypto and AI is. I feel like I didn't have the best answer there.
No, I think you did. I mean, I'm just, I don't know. I'm still digging into it, right? I mean, what I see from the outside is just that, you know, OpenAI has the best talent and the best models and obviously all of the users and access to the best hardware to train their models. So I'm sort of always curious in how crypto differentiates versus that, right? And I think, you know, I think you have a really good view on a many model future. And I think there's just so much latent hardware out there for inference and training. And I think inference makes more sense for crypto, you know, running those requests closer to the user versus trying to compete on training those models. So yeah, I'm sort of still a work in progress here, but I'm excited to talk to people like you because, you know, most of the time we are stuck looking at that resource provision, you know, Airbnb for GPU type box, and talking to people that are actually building, you know, or coordinating the best models for new experiences, I think is sort of the fun part, right? So it's just fun to talk.
Yeah, I think it'll be an exciting year for like crypto and AI and decentralized AI in general. I think it's still very nascent, but a lot of different forces are kind of coming together right now that I think will create a really powerful flywheel for kind of AI being integrated into more of these systems. So it's going to be an exciting year.
So Nick, when I host an AI pod going forward, I think every time I have to ask when AGI, when Terminator, what's what's your view?
I think it's farther out than is sort of the consensus view right now. It's always difficult to say what the consensus view. If I have to give a number, I'd say 5 to 7 years, if it's possible at all.
I mean, that's shorter than I would have expected. I thought you were going to go decades. Yeah,
really?
I don't know. I mean, we're only really at LLMs right now, right? But
I feel like I hear people say AGI solved internally all the time. You know, I feel like people think it's right around the corner.
Yeah, no, it is true. Well, Nick, I mean, it's been incredible to have you as a portfolio company. I mean, shout out to Piers at Delphi who originally, you know, led the deal for us. And just, you know, if anybody in AI and crypto is building, you know, feel free to reach out to me or Nick if there's any ways to work together. And Nick, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. I learned so much.
Yeah. Thank you again for having me. This was fun.